Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudy, do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again. And as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio today is Christian Brown. He is an old friend of mine, an animator and a writer with no prior podcast experience. Christian, hi.
Hi. How's it going, Mallory?
It's going fantastic. It's so fun to have you on the show. I think our listeners would be tickled to know that the first time you and I met, we met in a bar and you almost invited me to your wedding the next 2 days.
I think they'd be tickled. And Mallory, I don't know if you're aware, my 5-year wedding anniversary is next week, which makes this my 5-year you anniversary.
Holy cats. We've been pals for 5 years. That is fantastic.
I know. I'm delighted.
I have gotten to learn so much about DIY home projects from you and your wonderful wife. Yeah, and it's been a rich and abiding friendship. I've gotten to know your wife and your many pets and your deck projects.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that you weren't able to bring any nail gun related questions to the table for this podcast, but I will see if I can muddle through.
I should have gone through the inbox and just done like a control F search for dad or DIY and just seen what came up. But yeah, for whatever reason, we do not get a lot of like DIY related questions here on the podcast.
Shocking, but, you know, you work with the material you get.
You do. You do. But yes, if anybody does have questions about, I don't know, I couldn't even think of a funny word that was related to home repair because I've never repaired anything in my life. I own a hammer. My mother bought it for me. I keep it under the kitchen sink. I've never used it.
For emergencies, for like whacking a pest on the head.
I think she wanted me to use it to like hang pictures, but I just had my sister hang my pictures for me, which is very nice of my sister.
Like a much larger and more expensive hammer.
100%. If one of my pictures fell down like in an earthquake, I would call someone to rehang the pictures, like a professional.
Well, you know, you could always call me, Mallory. That's the sort of relationship we have.
Okay, so the reason that I wanted you in on the opening riff is partly just selfish. I thought it would be fun. But I also got a letter yesterday that reminded me of something that happens to me with less frequency now, but has happened like enough in my life that I think it is a thing. And I'm curious to know if you've ever seen this happen or heard of this happening. I don't imagine it's happened to you because I think it's pretty gendered, but we'll see. So
sure.
Somebody had written in.
But I'm pretty worldly. You never know. Let's see.
You are very worldly. You are a well-traveled man. You're like a male Carmen Sandiego, a law-abiding Carmen Sandiego.
Carlos Sandiego. That's what they call me.
So this woman wrote in and her issue was sort of well-intended politeness that was actually more inconvenient. She like worked at a tech company where there were more men than women. And often she said like on the elevator, guys will wait and kind of insist that I exit first, even to the point that they will like awkwardly hug the wall and kind of gesture for me to go in a way that like I don't always know that it's happening. It's actually kind of inconvenient and it makes me feel weird. I wish they wouldn't do it. And so I was kind of addressing that specifically with her and sort of pointing out the point of etiquette or chivalry or any of those things should be it makes things easier, right? You are smoothing over some sort of physical or social interaction and making it a little easier for someone else. And so it's always the worst when someone like gets rid of the spirit of the law and just goes to the letter, like, oh, I will inconvenience everyone. Like, way
more. To
demonstrate
that I'm aware of the ways in which one might be convenienced by this.
Yes. So, like, for example, I remember I went to, as you remember, like, a very conservative college in suburban Los Angeles. And I noticed this, I think, kind of for the first time there, but I've seen it in other areas of my life. I'm a fan of door opening. I think it's nice when people open doors for others. If someone wants to open a door for me, I'm thrilled. And generally, like, I will do my best. If somebody's like right behind me, I'll hold the door open for them. Occasionally, if I'm like right in front of a big group of people, I will, you know, stand and hold the door open and let them in. I always like it when people do it for me. It's nice.
That's because you're a chivalrous lady.
I think chivalry can be great. But I started to notice that occasionally, not infrequently, I would hold open a door. And if the person behind me was a guy, and like a specific type of guy, it seemed, it would be so unacceptable to him that he would stop and say, no, 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 let me, and insist that I let go of the door, that he would take my place, and I would then walk around him and go in. Like, he had to switch places with me. He could not accept someone opening a door for him. And it was always, every time it happened, it was astonishing. I was just like, this is incredible. Have you ever seen this happen? Have you ever seen a man refuse to?
I have absolutely seen it happen. I don't want to say I can one-up you because
no, please.
As a man, I feel like we can all agree that I am less affected by the vagaries of chivalry and.
I mean, I just want to point out this has not harmed me in any way. Like, I'm fine. Right. I just find it incredible.
But I have experienced men starting to hold the door open for whoever might be following, presumably in the expectation that it is a beautiful lady, looking over their shoulder, seeing that it is not a beautiful lady, but it is me, and then sort of hurriedly throwing the door shut behind them.
Oh, my God.
That I might accidentally think that they were being chivalrous towards me.
Fend for yourself.
Sorry, buddy. I know you can open a door, and then they slam it.
Yeah, which is amazing. Like, well, I would have held this door open for any woman alive, but as for you, get out. Like, just, I'm slamming it in your face. No, it's wild. Like, I don't even
know. And I also, again, like you said, it's sort of like, what is your stated goal here to make people's lives easier? Well, perhaps slamming doors or making people dance around you or, you know, awkwardly holding elevators for people such that they have to sidle past you like they're crab walking is maybe not the best way to achieve that stated goal. And you should reconsider the way that you're going about the things you think are important.
Yes, I am right there with you. If you have ended up in a situation where you are slamming doors in people's faces or forcing someone to do something that takes more time and energy, maybe you are not actually being polite at all.
Maybe. That's something to think about.
Yeah, just if someone holds the door open for you, go for it. All right, so let's just jump into the lettering today. I'm going to go ahead and read our first letter, and then we can trade off. I'm so excited that you printed these out and took notes, and I wish so much that you were...
I numbered them so I wouldn't get lost.
You numbered them. Okay, good, good. I really wish that I could see it, but, you know,
you
just...
That's the
send me a
podcast.
Picture later.
I could be lying. You have no idea.
It's true. I have absolutely no idea. You could be anywhere. So the subject line of this one is just values conflict. Dear Prudence, my mother-in-law, Bev, is a kind woman, and our 9-year-old daughter adores her. Bev has no interest in careers, higher education, or any achievements other than raising a family. Unfortunately, she communicates that to her grandchildren, especially the girls. My daughter has come home from her house saying things like, Grandma said I shouldn't worry about grades because someday I'll be a great mom, and Grandma told me I don't need to go to college. Bev says parenting is more important than studying, and that it's better to be a, quote-unquote, real mom on welfare than to work full-time. I went to an Ivy League school, and I'm successful in my field. I know that Bev badmouths me as a parent, but I'm mostly concerned about my daughter. Now Bev wants to care for her full-time after school. I'm worried that my daughter will lose interest in learning and outside activities. We can afford other childcare, but my husband is concerned about hurting his mom's feelings. I want my daughter to be whoever she wants to be, but I also want her to know that while being mom is a glorious thing, so is exploring the rest of the world and being independent. I don't want to demean Bev to our daughter, but I want to raise her as a feminist. How do I say no to free childcare without getting into a values-laden battle? I think I have some bad news for this letter writer. I think it's good news. but you're in a values-laden battle, and you should not try to avoid it. Like, that ship has sailed. The well, battle-free ship is gone. You're in a battle, and you should want to...
Put on the uniform. The battle has begun.
Yeah, pick up your shield, friend. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty... I've had questions in the past from people who said, like, we have grandparents who are mostly lovely but have some ideas that we don't want to pass on to our kids. And generally, if it's like, oh, they see their grandparents, you know, once a month or a couple times a year, and it's not something really horrifying, they're sort of like, well, you know, give them a different message at home. And as they grow up, they will be able to distinguish between messages and kind of make their own decisions. But this is pretty big. This is, I want to look after your kid every day after school, and also just let her know that college is for chumps.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing that I think, well, first of all, anytime you start off something by saying so-and-so is kind, like as your first sentence, I'm immediately suspicious, because that's the sort of thing that you say when you are worried that every other aspect of what you're about to describe is asshole behavior.
And it's always used vaguely, so right?
My mother-in-law is a kind woman, and here are 30 things she does that I hate and are incredibly mean and cruel and cruel to me specifically. I'm suspicious. And yes. I also think you kind of know what the right answer is here. I also think there's a pivot in the middle of this letter from my mother-in-law can be a jerk about the idea of jobs to my mother-in-law wants to care full time for my daughter. How do I handle that? Which I feel like there isn't enough of an adequate reaching out to the husband, the father in this situation either, right? Like all we hear about what the dad thinks is he doesn't want to hurt his mom's feelings. But like, this is first and foremost a parent decision, like mm-hmm. as a joint teamwork thing. And what does your husband think about the fact that his mom thinks that jobs are horrible and the only real work is motherhood? Like, yeah. Does he think that's okay? Is he
gotta
worried
say,
about his daughter being raised with that attitude?
Gotta say, not super impressed with the husband so far. I realize I'm only getting like secondhand information from this letter, but if all he said is, I don't want to hurt my mom's feelings, guy, come on, man. And that is what's wonderful about this too, right? Is like, you, this is so much like a type of person. This is like the Anita Bryant thing of like this incredibly strong personality, this strong-willed, forceful person who's like, women should do these like domestic things only. But she's clearly kind of got her son like cowed.
Absolutely, yes.
That's kind of amazing that you will often see this type of person who will explicitly say things like a woman's place is in the home with a heterosexual husband, reproducing biological children, doing X, Y, and Z, and not all these other things. Those are men's provenance. But then will be like a pretty domineering personality within that field.
I don't want to generalize, but here comes a really big generalization.
Yes, let's do it.
I feel like this attitude of, you know, a woman, it's better to be a real mom on welfare than to work full time.
That's such really a trolly thing
it's
to
less
say.
About, like, the values of like motherhood specifically, and more about the values of finding alternative ways to be in charge or to exert power or pressure on people. Mm-hmm. When you say, you know, like, it's better to be a real mom on welfare, like, that says to me that you think that it is like, it is about like how you are raising the kids, and that is the only way that the kids will be raised, for the mom to be, you know, declaring what happens next and what the values are and how they're executed. And it sounds like she did a good job with her son, because so far, at least in this letter, I see no evidence that her son disagrees with his mom about anything, and
yeah.
is in fact more worried about his mom's feelings than anyone else's feelings, including his daughter, which seems weird.
Yeah. So, yeah. Step one, you should demean Bev to your daughter. Which is not to say, like, kid, I got something to tell you. Your grandma's a real piece of shit. but you get to and should say things like, I really disagree with that. Here's what I think is valuable about, like, having a career. Here are the ways in which I value being a parent and also having outside employment and outside interests and outside opportunities. I disagree very strongly with your grandmother, and I hope that you know that you have a lot of options in life. And that if you decide, you know, my approval and love for you is not dependent on whether or not you become a parent, and like replicate my own choices. And I think you need to like say that pretty strongly and pretty often.
Oh, yeah.
And I also think you can challenge Bev when she says that shit and you're around. Like, you guys should probably increase the conflict you two are experiencing. Like, you say, I know Bev badmouths me as a parent, and it, that it's followed up with, I'm mostly concerned about my daughter, suggests to me that you haven't addressed that. And I think you should. I think you and your husband as a team get to say, like, Bev, it's fine if you disagree with the way that we live our life, but like, it's not okay for you to say, I mean, I don't know if she's saying this to your husband, if she says it when you're in the room, if she says it to other family members, but just to say, like, I'm going to ask you to respect my choices, and I'll do the same. That's really fair. And if she can't do that, like, you get to say, I've asked you to stop, and I'm going to, you know, get out of here. Like, you don't have to sit around and hear her say you're a bad mom because you have a job. And you should be pushing back on that. And you need to get your husband on that same page. Like, you need to make it really clear there are worse things in the world than hurting someone's feelings. Your mom is saying, you know, your mom is saying really damaging shit to our kid. And I have heard our kids say things like, I shouldn't go to school or college or worry about my grades, which is, I think, I hope you both can agree, is not something you want for your daughter.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And hopefully they need to get on the same page so they can then present a united front both to Bev and to their daughter.
Exactly.
On both sides, they need to be saying, look, this is not really something where there's disagreement. Being an asshole isn't nice. Demeaning working moms isn't nice, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And it's just wild to think that, like, you'll just be a mom someday. So at the age of 9, you shouldn't try to learn like cursive. Like, she's not going
to
be a mom in the next
addition and multiplication.
Right. That's really insulting to like stay at home parents. Right. Like, yeah, you need to know math to like balance a fucking household budget and go to the grocery store and like manage your family's investments and retirement accounts and do your taxes. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, these are skills that, you know, being a stay-at-home parent, you don't just sit around and intuit things all day, right? Like,
I feel like that's the sort of job that you don't need any training for or experience. Yeah.
You still have to live in society unless she's like an off-the-grid parent. Like, you're going to have to do things like interact with other human beings and the government and
I will say that this letter would make a lot more sense if they were living in a compound with no communication with the outside world. Suddenly.
Sure. Yeah.
Bev might have some good points.
Yeah, yeah. You don't need to worry about this because someone else is already, like, paying the utilities.
Yeah, exactly.
And all you need to know is whatever. But you don't. You don't live in a compound. This is nonsense. You get to call it nonsense. You've got to push back. Get into a value.
You're already in a battle, so embrace it.
Exactly. You're like, Bev's just the only one admitting she's out here fighting. And it doesn't mean you have to start throwing things at her or calling her names, but you absolutely need to start saying things like, yeah, you should worry about grades.
Education is important. That is a value that we have as a family.
And like, you don't have to, like, 9-year-olds should not be worrying a lot about whether or not they're going to make a great mom. Like, that's just not a concern a 9-year-old needs to have.
Yeah, there's a lot of context in between now and motherhood where they can, you know, figure
that
out.
Worry about being a great 9-year-old, you know? Worry about figuring out whether you prefer, like, you know, sketching to kickball or whatever.
Yeah.
You've got other shit on your plate. Yeah.
Very busy 9-year-old.
Yeah. Start countering that stupid ass messaging and make it clear to your husband that not hurting his mother's feelings needs to not be his primary goal in life as an adult and a father. Like, good gravy, sir. Get it together.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so The next letter, again, about families and different experiences of reality. I'll go ahead and take this one. The subject line of this is, my wife doesn't get my transition. Dear Prudence, I've recently come out as a trans man. My wife has always said that I am, quote, a bloke with girl parts. And I have always told her that I don't really feel like a woman. She was initially supportive when I came out, but she keeps saying things that are a little off. I'm not going to get mad about occasional pronoun slippage, as it's hard to change a habit, but she snaps at me whenever I correct her. She's asked me not to come out over Facebook and discouraged me from coming out publicly, but I need people to start using the right name and pronouns, and that can't really be done without coming out. The icing on the cake was when she recently asked me to go to L-Fest with her, and I said that I didn't know if I could. Her response was, well, you are a woman after all. I'm undecided whether this was intentionally hurtful or not, as she laughed when I looked at her, stunned. She's also asked that we don't tell our children about the transition. She also tells me that I'm not getting a mastectomy and that I can just keep binding. I have told her that this is a deal breaker for me if she's really against it, and she insists that she isn't. I mean, I would say the things your wife are saying are not a little off.
Yeah,
I think they are a lot off. No, there are genuinely people who, when they first hear that someone is transitioning, are well-meaning but pretty clueless, and are genuinely trying to understand and slip up and make mistakes. And that's pretty clearly not what this is, right?
Yeah.
Dealing with a partner's transition can often be messy and tricky, and it takes time. This is not mostly well-meaning with some mistakes. This is, your wife's lying to you. She's saying, oh no, I'm not against your transition. Just don't transition. Like, don't tell anyone. Don't pursue any of the medical procedures that you feel are necessary. Don't come with me to like a lesbian gathering that is like explicitly woman focused. I think of you as a woman. Like, your wife does not support your transition. And I'm so sorry.
Absolutely. And I think there's also, you know, this feels like a situation where someone is sort of trying to lean really hard into their existing emotional relationships with someone. You know what I mean? If someone says, oh, listen, I'm supportive of your transition. Like, that's great. I still love you. Everything's great. And you've been married to this person and you have a child together. Like, your goal is going to be to make sure that that remains the case.
Right.
That your partner is actually on your side and is going to be, working with you and helping you overcome all of the extremely vast and varied obstacles to a transitioning trans man. Like, there's a lot there that you need to deal with. And it feels to me like the letter writer is like really, really, really trying to more than meet halfway.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yeah. And as a result, isn't doing a very good job of taking care of himself. Again, I mean, I hate to harp on that, but this feels like another situation where it's, you know, someone is more worried about not misunderstanding their wife's statements and their wife's extremely cruel jokes. Like, regardless of whether or not she laughed afterwards, well, you are a woman after all, is like a horrible thing to say. Like,
The laughter to me felt like the worst part. I mean, that,
yeah,
like, letter writer, just so you know, that was intentionally hurtful. Your wife said that on purpose, and she laughed because she was winning, and she thought that that was like delightful. And I don't even want to come down on you for like, you're not doing a good enough job taking care of yourself. It sounds like your wife has really leaned on, Christian, as you said, the strength of your entire relationship and is saying, I love you. I support you. So obviously you have to believe me and you want to believe her. So the fact that she then says all these terrible things, tries to, you know, tell you to stay in the closet, tries to tell you not to pursue medical or social or public aspects of transition. The part of your brain that's like, well, I can't get rid of the premise that my wife's a good person who loves me. So clearly I'm misunderstanding these events. Clearly there's something else going on here. And I'm
absolutely
so sorry.
Yes.
You are seeing and interpreting these situations correctly. Like, she was trying to hurt you. She does not support this. She is against your transition. Like, she was perfectly happy to sort of jokingly acknowledge your gender identity when it was just saying things like, you're basically a guy with girl parts. But when it comes to saying, no, this is who I am, this is my name, these are my pronouns, this is how I would like to live and exist in the world. Boy, when it comes down to actually like backing up her words with actions, she is done.
I think that's absolutely true. And I would also say on top of that, like I don't say this lightly, but I think at a certain point, Loretta, you have to ask yourself whether you should be thinking in terms of maintaining your relationship as a couple or thinking about what actions you should be taking as an individual, as someone whose own self has a lot of value and has to take whatever steps are necessary to make sure that you are in a supportive and safe and welcoming place. And yeah. Repeatedly sort of like there's a lot of examples in this letter of reaching out and trying to like approach this as a couple and it just does not work.
Right.
And I think that that says that maybe you should be thinking about like, what can you do as just one person? What steps should you be taking as an individual to make sure that you're getting all of the support that you need, that you're doing what's right for you, not just what your partner is kind of shaming you into doing. And that's tough and that's a difficult situation, but it's also a lot better than constantly trying to just go along with whatever your wife is saying because you want to believe the best in her.
And I think one thing that you might find helpful is to say to your wife, because she's saying that like 2 and 2 add up to 19, right? She's saying like, oh, I support your transition. But at every step of the way, when you say, here is what my transition is involving, she says, no, you can't do that. So I think you just, the conversation that you get to have next is, here's what my transition's going to look like over the next couple of weeks. It will involve coming out over Facebook. It will involve coming out publicly. It will involve telling people the name and pronouns that they should use when they talk to or about me. It will not involve going to like women-themed events. It, you know, will involve pursuing like certain medical aspects of transition. If you don't support those things, you do not, in fact, support my transition. And I'm going to do them. And I'm going to come out over Facebook. I'm going to tell my friends, like my gender identity and ask for their support. And I hope very much that the response from your friends is better, than the one that your wife has given. But I think to say, these are the things that I need to do. And I will do them with or without your support. I would prefer your support. But I will not stay closeted, or neglect to pursue necessary care because you don't want me to. I can't do that. Like, you know, if that means our relationship is going to come to an end, that means our relationship is going to come to an end, but this is necessary for me.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, obviously this is a tough decision, but it's also the sort of tough decision that you write in for advice about. And Mallory, I think you're 100% correct. This is a situation where you have to take care of making sure that you are supported and doing what you need to do to transition, not just coddle your wife.
Yeah. And I'm just sorry. It would have been a lot easier if your wife had said, I'm against this. I don't support it. I'm not okay with it. This is the deal breaker for us. Because then at least you would have that information. It would be sad. It would be painful. But you would not feel like you were doubting your own sense of reality. And you wouldn't feel this sense of confusion, bewilderment, and sense of being abandoned. And I think this is just a bad way to respond.
Yeah. And you know, there's an extent to which there's a little bit of gaslighting going on here, too. And I think that's an extremely
a lot of gaslighting.
And it just doesn't help an already difficult situation.
Yeah. No, to say, I support your transition. I think of you as a woman. Don't tell anyone. Don't tell our kids. Don't pursue any medical aspects of transition. Don't tell anyone your name or pronouns. Like, motherfucker, what do you think transition is? Like, if it doesn't include, and which is, I'm sorry, that's not to suggest that everyone's transition has to include any or all of those things.
But when someone is directly asking for and saying, like, these are the steps that I need to take, this is what I need to do, and the response is laughter, and like, obviously, no, you can't do any of those things because they might impact me. Well, at that point, right, what exactly do you think a transition looks like?
Yeah. No, and it's just like, you can have anything on the menu you want as long as it's this, like, like a meatball sub. It's like that's not true yeah. support. That's just bullshit. This is not fall under the category of like a well-meaning cis partner who is like occasionally fouling up but trying their best. This is gaslighting, transphobic nonsense. And I'm so sorry. And I hope that you can tell other people in your life about your transition and that they will support and love you and just look after you and help you look after yourself, because it's a lot to go through a transition and a separation around the same time. And I'm really sorry. But I also think, you know, think about what it will be like just to be able to tell people that you want to tell, just to be able to say, this is my name. I think you will find that profoundly meaningful. And I think it will be really good for your kids.
Absolutely,
I think it will be good for your kids to have like a parent who like, who's not closeted, who's not feeling guilty about who he is because his wife tries to convince him that that's wrong. Like, this will be good for them and this will be good for you. And just fuck that noise. Fuck it hard. It's nonsense.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Take us away on the next one.
Subject of this one is a cousin using girlfriend for med school credentials. Dear Prudence, my cousin Anthony has been dating this girl, Violet, for a year or two now. Anthony was never very good at school, barely passing high school and struggling to get into a foreign medical school. He moved back to the U.S. for his last years of school and met Violet on a dating app. In the beginning, he's repeatedly said he didn't like her very much and didn't find her attractive. However, she is extremely smart and attends one of the best medical schools in the country. He has just told me they're planning to, quote, couples match at the end of school, which essentially means that they plan to link their applications so that they match into the same hospital slash specialty. This is traditionally meant for married slash engaged couples. When I asked Anthony if he was couples matching with Violet because he planned to commit to her long term or whether he was doing it because she will almost certainly help him match into a better program, he ignored me. My dilemma is whether I should advise her not to couples match with him. Typically, I would never think of getting involved in something like this, but as someone who worked hard to obtain a graduate degree myself, I'm uncomfortable with this. I've been told that based on his grades and his status as a foreign student, it is very likely that he might not match at all on his own, and without matching, he can't become a doctor. Should I try to talk to Violet? I know she is an adult who can make her own choices, but I fear that my cousin hasn't been completely honest about his prospects, and she doesn't fully understand how badly couples matching with him could damage her future.
Wow.
Yeah.
Exciting medical school hijinks.
First of all, cousin using girlfriend for med school credentials definitely suggested to me a much more thrilling and caper-related situation. I'm disappointed that this is entirely about matching into grad schools, which is a thing I hear too much about already. But, you know, we work with the material we're given.
We do.
Well, first of all, Not to over-explain this, but the way that couples matching works, I'm not super familiar with how it works for medical school specifically, but I know how it works for other PhD programs and other graduate programs. And basically, you will never match into a program you wouldn't have gotten into anyway with couples matching. What couples matching does is it lets you prioritize different schools and try to make sure that both of you, if you would have matched into a certain program, match into programs near each other. So you don't even generally pick like the same school. You pick schools that are near each other so that you can like be within a commuting distance of one another. So the downside for Violet here is pretty low, unless she really, 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 really like is willing to shoot herself in the foot over this. She would have to work pretty hard to sabotage her own prospects couple matching. And on top of that, early in the letter, we see that she is extremely smart and attends one of the best medical schools in the country. So I think it's a safe bet that she's not stupid and that she probably understands the process pretty well. And she understands sort of what the trade-offs are. So I would hesitate to advise any sort of like intervention or jumping in and like trying to mess with this just on the basis of Violet seems like a very smart and capable woman who can kind of handle herself and is aware of what she's getting into.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is helpful to remember is this is not a situation where like he's going to get into Johns Hopkins because he's riding Violet's coattails with her like, oh, Normally, we would never.
Right, but you guys are so cute together.
Give him a medical degree so we can keep her. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the letter writer says part of their concern is that they, like, worked really hard to get a graduate degree. And so I think they feel like there might be an element of fraud. So just bear in mind, if he does not have, like, the credentials to get into a school, this is not going to be what makes or breaks it. So that's helpful, I think, because, like, my first thought on reading this was, like, oh, no, he's going to become a doctor and he's going to be like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons, all because this, like, successful woman was, like, you know, her coattails were nearby. But that's not how it works. So with that in mind, you know, it sounds like a shady situation. I don't quite feel that the letter writer has enough evidence to justify intervention, especially given that this is your cousin. It doesn't say whether or not you've ever met this woman. Like, when they first started dating, he said he didn't like her that much and didn't find her attractive. That's kind of scuzzy behavior. But I think it is also well within, like, the realm of normal human behavior to sometimes go on a couple dates with someone you don't feel crazy about.
Right. Yeah. I would like to just point out, Anthony definitely sounds like he kind of sucks. Like, let's be clear here.
Yeah. No, I don't like Anthony. Yeah. He doesn't sound like a great guy, but it's not like, you know, he's not calling you regularly now and saying, like, she's terrible. I don't really care for her. She means nothing right. to me, which if you had that kind of information, like, that would be relevant to their relationship right. as it is now. And she would probably want to know. But as it is, you know, the most you have hard evidence of is that he was, like, you know, rude and churlish about her at the beginning of their relationship and then apparently gave her a yeah. second chance. And then, you know, yeah, beyond that, you don't know. Like, you asked, are you really thinking of committing to her? Do you think it's just going to help you with the program? He didn't answer.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't answer because that's an incredibly rude question to ask.
Fair. Yeah. Like, that's legitimate, especially, like, again, like, if you guys are not especially close. And he's been with her for a couple years at this point. He might really mm-hmm. like her by now. Like, he might have realized that, like, it is also possible he's just totally using her and he's just a total jerk. But it's also possible he really cares right. for her. And so it's kind of fair for him not to answer that question. Again, given that you have not seen, like, his secret basement of, like, my 27-point plan for tricking Violet into getting me a career.
Right, yeah. I mean, I will point out, too, as a conspiracy goes, this one seems not particularly effective or, like, that much easier than just, like, getting into a better school on your own. Like, there's really, like, I don't think that there's many ways in which the outcome for Anthony is anything other than he gets into a school he probably could have gotten into already, but this time he has to stay dating Violet for a while. Like, that sounds like not that much easier or more effective for him. As, like, schemes go, I would rate it at about a 2. Like, he could definitely be scheming a lot better. Yeah. It definitely doesn't feel like it rises to the level of a scheme that we need to call up Violet and let her know about based solely on letter writers, you know, detective work, that this might be kind of sketchy. And again, I think
right.
I'd be very surprised if Violet wasn't aware already of the risks and trade-offs that she was making. You know, she's smart. She's in med school. Like, she probably kind of knows what she's getting into.
I kind of like your just, like, shining faith in medical students of, like, she's smart. You can't pull the wool over Violet's eyes. Like, you know, smart people can also get manipulated.
I would say, as someone without a graduate degree, they seem impossible to me. And anyone who gets them, I would follow them into battle.
Fair enough. But you're afraid that Violet doesn't understand how badly couples matching with him could damage her future. I mean, maybe this is a lousy relationship and she will later feel like she wasted a couple of years of her life on that guy. But again, that's not an emergency. A lot of us go through, like, mm-hmm. lousy relationships we later regret. Certainly no medical school is going to turn down an excellent candidate because she is, like, dating a subpar medical student. So it's not as if she stands to lose out on something just by being associated with
him. That's a great point. It's very unlikely that this would have any negative effect. It might maybe conceivably have a slight positive effect on Anthony. And the underrunning thread through all of this, the kind of tone of it, feels more to me worried about Anthony getting something he doesn't deserve than about Violet.
Right. I don't want him to get away with this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think he's going to get away with a whole lot. Like, I think if he's not able to cut it in medical school, he will get washed out. Mm-hmm. And I think you should let this one alone.
Yep, absolutely agree. Don't bother.
So we just have a couple minutes, and I really, really want to get to this last letter. So dive right in.
Okay, let's do this.
Cat stealing letter. This is it. The showstopper. Take us home.
Okay, the subject of this one is, there's more than one way to steal that cat. Dear Prudence, for 2 years now, we've been caring for our neighbor's cat. She sleeps in our bed every night, is a wonderful companion, and a godsend to my anxiety. The neighbors are neglectful. They do feed her, but a diet so poor, she almost starved into oblivion before we started supplementing her diet when she asks every few days. After a long overdue vet visit, they actually commented to us she probably would have died if you didn't feed her, as if that were amusing. We're leaving this rental soon, partly because these neighbors are as inconsiderate to us as to the cat. We're polite, but cold with them, and terrified to ask about the cat, but we know it's the right thing to do. Still, I'm not convinced they'd even notice if she just disappeared. If it's actually about ethics and catnapping, as you've recently discussed, what's the best way for us to word this request?
All right, what do you got?
First, I'm proud of you for being the leading luminary for prospective cat thieves across the entire world. Good job. Obviously,
don't
steal
a good
cat.
Reason to steal a cat.
It sounds like these people don't really give a shit about their cat. I feel like the risk of being like, hey, man, we love your cat. Your cat's great. Do you want to never have to feed it or take it to the vet again? We've got you covered. Seems like it would probably go over pretty well. Like, not being like, hey, you're assholes and your cat really hates you. We're taking your cat away. But just being like, we love your cat. Your cat is like family to us. We have to move. How would you feel about us adopting the cat from you? Framing it as like something that is positive and not a crime. That's sort of my
right.
broad
like,
advice on cat thieving.
Yes, I think that that's really helpful. It's sort of like, would you do us a favor? Hey, she already spends so much time with us. They seem pretty chipper about it. They don't seem like the kind of like really grumbly people who are like, I won't take care of my cat, but no one else can have her.
Right.
It sounds like this would kind of spread sweetness and light everywhere. So I think definitely...
take that cat, but
frame
we will not
way.
Call it stealing. This is a rehoming. It's an adoption process, not stealing. Do
yeah.
not steal cats.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, okay, that I think we both agree on that. Let's say you ask and they say no. And Christian, do you then say steal a cat?
I mean... I don't know. Mallory, I'm, you know
I mean, at
me.
At that
I'm
point, they're
going to
know if the cat goes missing.
I might steal the cat, but I'm not saying that's good advice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying like people steal the cat. I'm just saying if it were me in that situation, the cat sleeps in my bed. I feed the cat. I take the vet to the cat, the cat to the vet. There's a non-zero chance that I steal the cat. But again, it's a crime. I do not recommend it. I certainly would not advise a letter writer to do it. I'm just speaking my truth here.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say, I think you should ask. I think they're likely to respond well. You do also have the option of like calling whatever your city's like animal control services mm-hmm. are. If they say no, like, hey, there's a cat that like is sometimes neglected. Keep an eye on it. That might not be their top priority. So I realize that's an imperfect solution. Do I want to grant my like cat stealing permission given that the cat is currently in good health, has recently been to the vet. You know, she probably would have died if you didn't feed her. That gives you permission.
Yeah.
You have my permission. I don't think you should start with stealing the cat. I genuinely think there's an excellent chance that you can just have the conversation, do it all above board. Everyone's going to be happy.
Yes.
You can leave these monsters behind. But yeah, when somebody says the cat would have died if you didn't feed her and there was not some like extenuating circumstance, like we were all struck with a horrible illness
or like an apology
and we're all bedridden ourselves for months. Yeah, you get to steal a cat when someone acknowledges that they would have killed it.
Yeah, I think
indirectly.
We're in agreement here. Start with asking, but cat theft is potentially on the table after all alternatives have been exhausted for the cat's well-being.
Yeah. But friends, that was a case-by-case basis. That does not give any of the rest of you permission to steal a cat. I don't feel comfortable with having gone on record now saying steal a cat. So again, if you're not sure.
Yeah, I feel like we both committed a crime today. And thanks.
Yeah. No, you got to feed cats.
Yeah.
You got to feed them pretty regular. And if they are starved nearly to oblivion, you've done a bad job of stealing
a
cat.
Yeah, terrible cat owner. I think we can all agree the neighbors suck. Let's go on the record there.
Yes. Yeah, they can hang out with Anthony at his crappy med school and just be jerks. All right. We have used up all of our studio time and then some. We really need to get going. But I'm so glad we got to tackle the cat thief.
This was a delight. And Mallory, as ever, you are as empathetic and hilarious at handling these problems as you constantly are.
All right, my friend. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. And Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. And if you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.